From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin studio. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin will spend the day in the La Crosse area, in part to talk about plans in place and in the works to help residents dealing with PFAS contamination in local drinking water sources. In particular, many residents of the town of Campbell have been forced to drink bottled water for more than a year. That's after polyfluoroalkyl and perfluoroalkyl substances were found in area aquifers. Ahead of today's visit, we talked about it with Senator Baldwin. One of the big things that has happened in the last few months is this previously passed $3.7 million that's headed to La Crosse, the city of La Crosse, for the wellhead treatment apparatus. That doesn't, though, affect the most highly impacted area, which is town of Campbell, and I understand that's what you're trying to address through the bill that you've authored. But what is the wellhead apparatus going to provide for the city of La Crosse?
PFAS, which is kind of a forever chemical that we're learning more and more about, but it is hazardous to our health, and we don't want to be consuming it in our drinking water. There's a number of ways that we can mitigate and remediate. When it's in the ground, in the soil and then in the groundwater, one really has to use sort of filtration techniques to get it out of the drinking water. But to the degree that it's in the soil, you also want to be able to remove the soil so it doesn't contaminate additional drinking water. And there's several points at which you can, intervene, if you will. We're wanting to tackle PFAS wherever we find it and make sure that people have healthy drinking water. You also have folks that get their drinking water through private wells and people who get their drinking water through public utilities. And so again, you're going to have a different strategy depending on what is the case there. And that's kind of what differentiates La Crosse and the town of Campbell, et cetera. My focus is helping local communities in Wisconsin address PFAS chemicals and be able to assist in providing safe and clean drinking water for everyone. And so Friday, tomorrow, I'm looking forward to visiting with officials and residents in La Crosse and the town of Campbell to discuss and highlight how we are going to address PFAS contamination with existing funds and hopefully future funding to provide assistance.
The existing funding, or at least that which was passed in the big omnibus bill that the $3.7 million comes from, didn't have funding that would help those private well owners. But the act that you've introduced, the Healthy H2O Act bill that you have introduced, does provide that level of funding.
Yes.
And what is the expected timeline on a thing like that? I know a lot of people don't really know when they hear something's been introduced in the House or in the Senate. They don't really know how to understand how long that could take until it actually takes effect.
Judging the timeline of how long it might take to pass a bill is at best guesswork. I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of other senators on a bipartisan basis who face these challenges in their states and communities. So I'm hoping that this will be, that the Healthy H2O Act will garner a lot of bipartisan support. And one of the targets is to make it a part of the farm bill that is renewed every few years. Right now, it's due for renewal next year. And so if we're not able to pass it as a freestanding bill, I hope it gets, or I'm going to work very hard to make sure it's incorporated into the farm bill, because it really is something that affects rural communities across the United States. And certainly would provide substantial assistance in the town of Campbell. But let me just describe what the bill does.
Sure.
Because people who do rely on private wells for their drinking water often do not have the water tested with great regularity. There's impediments that sort of, not simple to figure out where it is you'd bring your water for, you know, a sample for testing. It costs money. And so people need to know that their private wells are providing clean water. And this bill starts by giving grants to allow individuals to test their water, or grants for a community project to test widely in a particular area. In addition, if the drinking water is found to be contaminated, there's a second series of grants that go out to remediate the issue. So if it may be a filtration system in the home, it may be something else, but we have technologies these days that allow us to clean contaminated water. And so it's really a very neat solution for a vexing problem that we're seeing all over the state of Wisconsin and across the country. And I'm very hopeful that we'll be able to pass it either on its own or in the context of the Farm Bill.
One of the major contributors to that contamination in the La Crosse area, especially out there on French Island, is suspected to be like firefighting chemicals used at the airport. And there are alternatives being used in other parts of the world that exist, and yet the U.S. FAA has not authorized the use of any of those in place of the foams that contain the PFAS chemicals. Can the Senate, can the Congress do anything to apply greater pressure on the FAA to require that kind of action?
Yes. We've been trying to ramp up the pressure to move expeditiously on this for a while, and it's very frustrating, the slow pace. And as you note, not only are other nations finding workable substitutes, but other localities are too. I've heard from any number of Wisconsin communities where they've tested out alternative types of firefighting foam that is, that is then being purchased and used in our communities that don't contain PFAS. The Federal Aviation Administration has claimed that these alternatives don't have the same efficacy. And we need to them to view this as an urgent need to substitute out something that is not going to contaminate our drinking water, but that is also going to be effective in fighting aviation fires.
Senator Tammy Baldwin is going to be in La Crosse later today, Friday, and we'll be talking more about the Healthy H2O Act. Senator Baldwin, I appreciate you joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you so much.
Coming up next, we're spending the rest of the program getting outdoors. We'll talk about local hiking trails and learn about different ways to paddle through our area's waterways. That's coming up. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. We're getting outdoors to enjoy some of this spring weather, even really feels like early summer weather in a lot of ways. Later, we'll hear from Island Outdoors in La Crosse about kayaking and canoeing. We'll also talk to a paddler who's getting ready to go the length of the Mississippi River. That'll be interesting. But first, let's get out for a nice hike. Go for a little walk. Whether you're trekking around the neighborhood or gearing up for a hike up the bluffs, walking is great for both your mental and physical fitness. Joining us with more on some of the hiking opportunities in the La Crosse area and beyond, Jed Olson, Executive Director of Aura Trails, and Chris Stint, Aura Events and Programming Director. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ezra.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Certainly. So it may seem obvious to some, may seem less obvious to others. Let's start with you, Jed. Why get out on a trail this weekend?
Well, I think get out on a trail because it's a great way to be guided through nature. So a lot of times, you know, you show up to a a piece of forest or a place out in the woods, you don't know where to go. You haven't been there before. You don't know what the experience is. And a trail is a great way to help show you the path, literally and figuratively, on how to enjoy that experience. So the trails we have are designed with a lot of intent, and they want to bring you to those beautiful vistas. They want to keep you at a the best route through the woods and enjoy these spaces.
The diehards know what they're doing. They know where to go. They know the trails they like to hike, and they like to sort of turn over a new leaf now and then. But Chris, for somebody who's being newly initiated, talk about what kinds of trails are available within our listening area in La Crosse and the surroundings.
Almost certainly there's a trail in your backyard or very near your house. And, you know, you asked the question to Jed of why go out for a hike or why try the trails. And, you know, all across the Blufflands, there are a variety of trails. So most people are familiar with Hickson Forest and the trails right here in town on the golf course. But there's new trails behind Granddad's Bluff. There's trails along in different areas. And I think the beauty of that is there are all kinds of trails. So you could have something close to home, or you could find something that fits with what you're looking for. You know, if that's a scenic overlook, if that's an easier hike with young kids or your grandmother, or if that's, you know, a really challenging longer hike, you have the option to find something close to home and something to fit your style.
So how many trails are kind of managed by Aura Trails?
I'll jump in on that one. It's a unique relationship with every landowner. So we are not the land manager on any property, and we help facilitate. So we work with the City of La Crosse, and we have the City of La Crosse has a number of different trail sites. Like Chris mentioned, most people think of Hickson Forest. We've got the City of La Crosse has a number of different Bluffland properties stretching from County Road B all the way down towards the south end of town, and we help out. Really help guide, maintain, and advocate and promote those trails. And I would say that across that span, just in the City of La Crosse, we've got maybe somewhere in that maybe 25 mile range. Some of our trails are what we call maybe a social trail or a rogue trail. Some are okay because they're kind of just happen to be in a sustainable place. Some are not in a great spot. And it's hard to kind of determine exactly the number and miles of access spaces. So most public lands allow you to get out and explore them without a lot of restrictions. So you can kind of hike where you want, but we really encourage folks to use those well-established trails. So we do active trail management and repair, restoration, and maintenance on, you know, 20 plus miles of trails right in the City of La Crosse and kind of edging into a couple of our nearby communities. And we've got kind of what we call our trail champions, those folks who identify with what we're doing, and they're pushing for new projects, or they're helping just doing their part. And we overlap with lots of other organizations that have similar or aligning messages really within a 30-minute radius of La Crosse.
So when you go out to, let's say there's a place that's been popular to walk, but some of it might be a little bit treacherous, erosion has become an issue, and like you've done on the Granddad Bluff area, people really want something more formal that says, this is the trail you're supposed to walk on. How is it, what goes into preparing that space to be groomed to that extent? I mean, I've done the before and after on a couple of those trails, and you go from like what literally were like small, like cattle trail looking things. And now you've got, you know, 3-4 feet wide passages with like crushed rock paths and all that kind of thing. Yep. What goes into that?
Yeah. So there's a huge amount of physical work that goes in, but the piece that most people don't see is the before work, you know, like, really, the national average, there's a statistic out there that says your average trail takes 7 to 10 years to go from idea to on the ground. When we were doing history research on the Granddad Bluff project, we read back to documents that I believe it was Joseph Losey in the late 1800s was proposing a trail that takes you from Riverside Park to Granddad Bluff. And so you go from late 1800s. Now today, you can make that happen, and really, you really only cross one street. So you could go from Riverside Park and you could go through the marsh, under the highway, under the railroad tracks, up into Hickson Forest, across the backside of the forest, and you'd cross the road right at the Alpine, And then you could get out to Granddad Bluff with just crossing one street. So the work that went into that was hundreds of years in the planning. But when it comes down to actually putting the trail on the ground, we're really looking to maintain what we call sustainable grades. So we want the trail to run more crosshill than straight up and down. And then it's a matter of determining what that final user experience will feel like and figuring out if that's something that we dig with hand tools or if we bring big machines out to put that onto the ground.
Chris, what if somebody is looking for a new trail walking experience and they're not quite sure where to start? Is there technology that's involved in that or a place they can download maps or apps, or what do you recommend?
Yes, all of the above. So if you go to our website, oratrails.org, oratrails.org, we do have a section that's going to help. There is a map, there's an app that you can download, and I think that's helpful. There are also links to a couple different websites, including one called Trail Forks. And depending on the level of service you can buy, it's an app with Trail Forks. We'll actually geolocate you on your phone on the app. And I think that's a really handy way to do it. The downloadable map doesn't have that same service, and so it's helpful, right? You can have that copy, but if you get out in the woods and you get a little bit turned around, sometimes we've all become pretty reliant on our cell phone and Google Maps to kind of tell you where you are and where to go. And so I like having the ability to have an app kind of be able to track that a little bit. So a lot of different options. I think the city as well has a map of some of the different properties they use. So a lot of different options. And we actually even have physical paper copies that we give out at some of our events. And so, if a listener is interested in that, they can certainly contact us through our website and we could get them connected with a physical map as well.
Jed, anything to add there?
No, I think Chris nailed it, is that pick your poison. There's a lot of different mapping apps. You got Map My Run, Map My Ride, All Trails, Trail Forks, all these different apps really kind of integrate pretty well. Whatever's going to get you outside and make you comfortable with what you're doing, use that. And like Chris said, the city of La Crosse does have some great maps that they've developed, and the particular application for those is called Avenza. And that one lets you download that real nice color PDF that the city's put out and that we've helped develop. And then again, you can be that little blue dot and find out exactly where you are on the map.
I know this varies according to which location you're at, but is there any kind of growing standard, or in most places, is there some way to tell when you embark on a particular trail what kind of effort you're about to get yourself into? Like if somebody wants to make sure that they're going on a trail that's a bit flatter, maybe an easier fitness level than something that is a lot of up and down or experiences a high degree of elevation or something like that.
Yeah, I can jump in on that one, Ezra. And we use a system universally across most trail systems in the United States. We use a system that matches up with our downhill skiing. So a green trail is going to be your beginner trail, a blue trail is your intermediate, and a black trail is your more difficult. And just like a ski hill, there's places where you've got your black diamond, your double black diamond, your triple black diamond. It is a little tricky because sometimes that describes the surface of the trail and sometimes it describes that fitness level. But if you're looking for that lowest barrier to entry, the green is going to be both that smoother trail and the easier fitness option. One of the blessings we have in our region is the great topography and geography that we've got, but it's also a curse in that it's sometimes really hard to get a trail that's really applicable for all users, something you can go walk with a toddler or a grandparent on. They are out there. A lot of we've got some great flat trails. We've got a great history in the region with Rails to Trails, the Elroy Sparta Trail, kicking that off very early in that movement. Holman has the Halfway Creek Trail, which is a trail that kind of just follows a very flat meandering trail that's great for that easy entry level, and a number of different paved pathways throughout our communities that sometimes, they tuck under the freeway, they tuck through neighborhoods. You pop out at a shopping center. A trail is a trail, and it brings you to the place you want to be, and it helps you get out of your car and get through your neighborhood.
I am going to put you both on the spot, and we'll pick on Chris first and give Jed a chance to think of his answer. I'm wondering, I'm asking you to pick favorites here, but I'm wondering what your favorite trail is that you've worked on. And then in addition to that, if you have another favorite place to hike that is maybe somewhere else within our listening area.
I really am an avid trail user, and I hate to use the word avid because sometimes I think it gets a negative connotation, but I am out. I hike with my family. I run, I trail run, I ride my bike. I cross country ski. I really get out and use them in all ways, shapes and forms. It's so tough to, this doesn't mean I don't like the other trails. I feel like they're going to hear me. I live just a couple blocks away from the bottom of Granddad's Bluff. And the ability that there's a trail from 29th Street that just goes up. And the ability to have that access, you know, three blocks from my house is just second to none. And I would probably, there's a loop that I can do, you know, in 30 to 45 minutes where I walk over, I go up, there's a staircase. Is that Claire's Climb? Jed, am I saying that right? Yep. I get the names mixed up. I can do a loop. I can be out in the woods and, you know, just enjoying nature, and I can come back down these switchbacks and be back home. And I would have to say that's my favorite just because I use it so frequently and that ease of access. As far as in the whole region, I don't know. I'm biased. I think we have the best trails like right here in our backyard. I mean, there are some fantastic places to go. You know, we want to get out of town. We'll go up to Perot State Park and we'll hike with my family. But it's just so difficult when it's right. The stuff that we have is right here is so high quality. And so I would say, you know, 5 to 7 days a week, you'll find me in some way, shape or form outside on our trails.
Jed, what about you?
My favorite spot on our local trails is one that I've both worked on and probably my favorite place to stop and admire is one of the lookouts on the Granddad Bluff project. So it's our southernmost lookout on that project. And it's where the vista that you're looking at is looking more south than west. So most of our bluffs kind of look out towards the river, and this one looks into the valley. So you can look to your right and you see the city. You look to your left and you just see trees and you see nature. And one of the things I really, that strikes that for me is when we were building that project, I was out there for some very long days, and it was right during the full moon. And I got to sit at that same point as the moon came up and as the sun came up and the moon went down, and later in the days as the sun would go down and the moon would come up on the other end. And it's because it's a south facing point, I get to see east and west skylines, and it's a very memorable spot. But second is where it's a trail called Wood Duck that kind of cuts under the highway. And again, I just like these really little kind of back access points. And there's a trail that connects from Myrick Park over to what we kind of call the Boy Scout and Girl Scout area and the golf course. And it goes under the highway, and the creek right there also flows under the highway. And years ago, apparently somebody dumped goldfish in there. And I know they're an invasive species and they're not really supposed to be there, but it's kind of fun when you catch a glint of goldfish just swimming in a creek, making their own happy life in the city of La Crosse, just like the rest of us.
It's you're making me want to go out for a walk.
It's nice and cool over there, too, because you got the cool spring-fed creek going through that tunnel. So on a day like today, that's a great place to go.
So tell me one more time, Jed, if people are interested in learning more about Aura Trails or finding a volunteer opportunity or just downloading maps of the trails that are in our area, where can they do that?
Yeah. So again, it's going to be the best landing spot is our website, which is oratrails.org. And there you can sign up for our newsletter. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook, but our website's that great landing spot where you can get connected by email or other, and then come on out to our events. We do lots of maintenance and trail work events. We do we have parties and festivals to celebrate the work that's happening, and we do competitive activities and events. And so if Chris sounds a little bit slow, it's because he's coming off a huge weekend of our La Crosse Omnium, which was a 3-day bike race that happened in La Crosse, and lots of our board members and volunteers had huge input and impact on the La Crosse Marathon. So if you were in town this weekend and you weren't outside watching people get really tired or doing it yourself, you were at the wrong spot.
Chris, you are the events and programming director for Aura Trails. Tell me what you got coming up.
That is a great question. So at the top of the show, you mentioned paddling. We actually have a paddle race coming up on Sunday, May 15th at Goose Island County Park. And it's a perfect opportunity if you're a casual paddler or you're a competitive paddler. We have a 7.2 mile loop around Goose Island. There's going to be a free lunch provided, and there are morning and afternoon races. Additionally, we have some different hikes coming up, some different options to get out. In the winter, it's a little bit easier to catch the full moon. In the summer, it's a little bit later to try and stay out for that. So some different opportunities. We partner with WISCOR. And then we have a mountain bike race, a competitive mountain bike race coming up in July as well. So like Jed said, definitely check out our website. Check out our, I think our Facebook page is also just great because we're regularly updating it. And a lot of people are always asking me, I regularly get the question, how do we get more involved? We love the outdoors, we love hiking, how do we give back? And the trail work is happening regularly, and you can find out all of that information as well. So Jed's much better at like being in the dirt. I'm much more of a on the computer behind the scenes kind of guy. But I'll tell you what, an hour of digging in the dirt and helping the trails is fantastic. I think it's good for the soul. And I think it helps you really appreciate all of the work that goes into our trails. So I would highly recommend checking out our trail work nights, and you can find that information on Facebook.
That's Chris Stint from Aura Trails. Chris, thanks a lot for being here today.
And thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity.
Yes, and Jed Olson is the Executive Director of Aura Trails. Jed, thanks a lot for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you, Ezra. It's always a pleasure.
And now we're heading for the water to do some canoeing, maybe hop in the kayak a little bit, paddle down the river. Joining us to talk about it is Scott Gartner, who is the owner of Island Outdoors. Scott, welcome to Newsmakers.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was, it was a nice call to get.
Absolutely. A never bad time to talk about being outdoors, but so nice to see the weather kind of cooperating with us a little bit this week, warming up. It's going to be fun getting on the water.
Yeah, we decided like 10 days ago we were going to, that was before we saw the heavy change in weather patterns. We said the first school group outing was going to come on Thursday this week, and we're going to pray for it to change to 55 degree water temperature around the river. And I mean, we're going to have that all day.
Talk to me about your own involvement in water sports. When did you first get out in a canoe or in a kayak?
Canoes has been for as long as I can remember. My parents took us to somewhere like Namakagan or something every year. We went to up by Hayward when we were younger. So I mean, I fell out of my first canoe and had the whole thing tip over with my dad when I was probably 7 years old.
I've been canoeing. I've been in a kayak. I wouldn't say I'm good at it, but if people are thinking about getting outdoors more and they don't have a lot of experience, like that can be an intimidating thing. You know, there's the water. There's how do I control the particular vehicle that I'm in? What happens if, like you said, tip over? End up in the water, in the drink, so to speak. How do you recommend people get involved in this kind of water sport if they've never done it before?
No, it depends on what aspect of paddling you're doing. So at our shop, the rentals are going to be pretty much wide and, you know, slow comparatively to racers. Okay. So you get to our shop, we put you in on the dirt ground and we push you into the water. Well, as long as you can sit straight up and down, I mean, which we've had people in their 80s that, you know, just didn't have core strength and tipped right over. But Ezra, we are not trying to do something that is extremely hard. We're trying to have anybody be able to come. And then if you're really small, we have those like tandem kayaks or canoes so that you can have your dad or mom paddle with you, you know. But everything that we have here is, I mean, our paddle boards are almost 3 feet wide. Our canoes and kayaks are, our canoes are all 3 feet wide. Kayak, probably don't rent one under 28, 29 inches wide. So, I mean, we basically take out the air that you could make if you're in a 24 incher where your hips just barely fit in there. And so we kind of just do that for you. Then we'll just give a tiny little lesson like, hey, to go to the left, you got to paddle on your right. So just think about your right means left. Left means right. You know, just little kind of gimmicks like that we give them. And then, I mean, we have to give them a PFD, a personal flotation device. So if they would go out of the boat, they would be held up by that.
What kind of fitness level is required for somebody to let's talk about kayaking just off the top of it here. What kind of fitness level is required for somebody to become kind of a regular kayaker?
You have to have some pretty upper body strength. You can't be jelly arms or something because, you know, you'll come around the corner and all of a sudden the wind's coming a different direction. And if it's not the way you want it to go, I mean, you got to be able to battle that stuff. So if you're in terrible shape, there's no reason to try it. If you're in medium shape, you can do almost everything. And then if you're in great shape, you could take our kayaks from where we put them and put them in heavy current or in, you know, like small rivers and canoe up it if you want to, if you're in great shape.
If somebody's looking for a place to go, maybe they've been over to your place and tried the rental out. Maybe they have a canoe or a kayak of their own now that they have kind of gotten into the sport and they're looking for someplace new to try. Where do they find out where the different opportunities for putting a boat like that in the water are?
I think, you know, I have a big list right in front of me just because we carry a list because we have other group outings. You know, we can go from the Black River to La Crosse River. Then in the La Crosse River, you can go from Veterans Park to Holiday Heights. You can go from Kenny Cooley to Earls, so on and so forth. But if they want to do something that they've never done before, it's probably better to go in like the Black River around us. And there's kayak landings right on Clinton Street. And what is a good source is called, give me one second, explorelacrosse.com. I think is what it is.
Okay.
And it's our tourism bureau.
Uh-huh.
There's an actual paddling section you can click on to see some locations.
So what about the cost of some of these things? I mean, I know you've got anything from your, you know, big box store lower end costs for a canoe or a kayak all the way up to the, you know, many thousands of dollars for your, you know, ultra sporting expensive kind of thing. What kind of costs are people looking at to participate in something like this if they want to buy a kayak, buy a canoe?
It, you know, our shop probably starting around $400 for a kayak. Okay, now we both know Walmart probably has a $99 kayak. It's just not something that I want to get in, but I mean it'll do for a 8-year-old girl or something, or you know, just something that not going to spend a lot of money on, they're going to outgrow it and stuff like that. But ours starts at like 400 and we sell, I mean, I've sold kayaks up to 5,000. I've sold canoes even more money because you start getting into like Aramid or like, you know, ultralight Kevlar, stuff like that, which Aramid is a Kevlar. Okay. Just people don't understand what that word is. But that stuff gets extremely expensive, but you can, you know, put it over your head and walk from pond to pond up in the, you know, like they call it when you go to the, not the UP, what do you say? In the Canada and in the boundary waters and stuff, okay? Well, it wouldn't be very much fun to carry a 200-pound canoe around, okay? So these guys buy this ultralight stuff, and it costs a lot, but it's just really nice, and if that's what you're into, you're going to buy the nice stuff. And then, like I said, if you got three kids and they all want one for Christmas, you're probably just going to go buy some little lower end, you know, kids are going to get bigger. They're not going to fit it. So it just depends on how much you're into it. And if you just want to try, like our Thursday night paddle group is just like, I think it's $20 for the night. And we go for a couple hours as a group and you could just see if you even want to put the next 300, 400 into your, you know, kayak. Because if you didn't have fun on that group paddle, you're probably not going to have fun by yourself, you know.
And is that something that people should sign up for in advance, or can they just show up at the store?
No, they have to sign up in advance.
So tell me about, I've heard of, obviously we've been talking about canoes and kayaks, but there are other individual ways to get in the water. And you mentioned paddle boards, which is not a concept that's difficult to imagine. What in the world is a hydro bike? I've never heard of that one.
It's a bike frame with the spokes, wheels, pedals and everything, and the chain and everything that goes to a prop. And so instead of being on two bike tires, you're on two pontoons, one on your left side, one on your right side. Then you're sitting on a bike, just like any bike that you'd find at any store. And when you spin the wheels, it turns the chain, which is spinning a prop that has a lower unit. So you're basically just cruising around on a bike, and it's super stable, and you can stand up, and you can just chill out. It's got a little can cooler in front of you that you can put some beverages and water, whatever you want. And yeah, it's a pretty neat thing. We have four of them, so groups can come, two couples or whatever.
And so, since there is no, do I have this right? Since there is no engine, there's no need to like have it licensed or registered or anything like that. You just buy it, put it in the water.
In Wisconsin, you have to be like, I can't remember, it's 14, 15. We don't even have anything long enough to register. In Minnesota, I think it's at 12 feet. So you do have to know your state laws on the registering your,
okay,
your kayak. But Wisconsin, 10, 12, 13. I mean, I don't think, I know for a fact, none of that has to be registered.
Well, hey, Scott, I appreciate your time. And I've enjoyed getting at least theoretically into the outdoors and getting into the water a little bit. Scott Gartner is the owner of Island Outdoors. Scott, tell us where we can find your store or your website.
All right, we're Island Outdoors, and we're at 1330 Bainbridge Street on French Island, the same street that goes to airport. And I mean, there's only one Quick Trip, so we're right next to that, one building off. And you can check out our rentals and what we have to offer at islandoutdoors.us, like United States, islandoutdoors.us. But yeah, you can call us too, 608-782-5552.
Scott Gartner, Island Outdoors, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Remember, you can hear this conversation again or stream any of our previous episodes on demand. Just go to wpr.org/newsmakers. That's wpr.org/newsmakers, or find Newsmakers in your favorite podcast app. Coming up, we're paddling again, this time in support of a good cause. We'll talk about paddling for hope. That's next. Back in a minute, it's Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our Southwest Wisconsin Bureau. Thanks for joining us today. We've been talking about getting outside and hiking and kayaking and canoeing and all kinds of things. And now we are going to talk to somebody who is really going to do some kayaking. Joining us is Bobby Rathert, who's a kayaker who's doing an interesting fundraiser called Paddle for Hope. And she is going to be paddling the entire length of the Mississippi River, all up and down. And I'm excited to talk about that and to hear how that's going to raise funds for Hope Restores, which is a nonprofit organization here in La Crosse. First of all, Bobby Rathert, welcome to Newsmakers.
Thanks, Ezra. I appreciate being invited.
I'm excited to hear about this trip. First of all, that sounds really long. How long does it take to paddle the entire length of the Mississippi River?
It depends on a lot of things, and I've seen the range of days from just under a month to over 100 days. So I've given myself between 80 to 100 days so I can mosey on down some days and see things and enjoy it.
So you're taking the more leisurely pace so yeah, that you can enjoy the journey.
That's right.
Your stops along the way, do you plan them out in advance, or is it more like, well, we'll see how far I can get today?
I think it's a little bit of a mixture, but the practical side is studying maps in the morning before you launch, and having a goal of a possible campsite or island up ahead. And you might hit that goal, or you might not, or it might be washed out when you get there. But you've got, I think it's important to have some alternatives. One thing about being on the river for me is to not make it like real life, which is well planned and predictable and sometimes routine. So, but also to be safe and be logical about that.
Are most of your stops going to be like camping, sandbars, that kind of thing? Or are there places along the way where you're interested in stopping in an actual town, in a city, getting a hotel room for the night or something like that?
Right now, I want to spend as many nights on an island or park or campsite, but I imagine that will wear on me like anybody else, and I'll look for a hotel along the way. One of the issues with kayaking is that wherever you stop, you've got to be able to take your kayak with you. So it would have to be a riverbank hotel or lodging of some kind.
How long have you been kayaking?
I've been kayaking for about 20 years. And about 20 years before that, I did mostly canoeing.
Okay, so you've been paddling in one way or another for quite a long time.
Right, yeah.
Now, I was reading your website a little bit. You've been adventuring from a very early age. Tell me, what was the first time that you decided, I'm going to just go check things out?
I think when I was 5, when I took a little... I lived in a little town in Iowa, and, towns have sprawled since then, even little towns. So right near our house was a woods, and it was a woods right in town. So I just wandered there. But, as we get older, we go bigger, and that's what I did.
Have you ever done a trip like this where you're doing the whole length of the Mississippi or other kind of like longer multiple overnight trips kind of thing?
Not really. This is probably the biggest and longest that includes both camping and paddling, where I've gone paddling and I've gone camping and I've hiked some of the Appalachian Trail and I hitchhiked over 5 states and I toured Europe, and all these things come in different fashions. And this one seems to have all of the obstacles and challenges and excitements put together.
What does your rig look like for a trip like this? Does all your gear fit in one big long kayak, or how does?
Yep.
Oh my.
If it doesn't fit there, it doesn't go.
And, okay. So you're not like hauling a secondary thing behind you or something like that.
No trailer. No. Some people use a road crew or a family member who meets them, but I'm planning to put everything I need and hopefully even less inside the kayak. And there is a weight limit, so I have to watch for space and weight.
Yeah. It reminds me of some of these backpackers that you see trying to, like, they weigh every single item that goes into the pack down to the half ounce or something like that.
I've done that.
Really tedious.
Mm-hmm. It is tedious and pretty obnoxious after a while. In the beginning, it was just pounds by pounds, and now it is ounces and size. And do I really need a little lawn chair? And I've traded out stoves 3 times. So, but I think in the end it will pay off, because there's quite a bit of portaging on this trip, and being an older woman alone, I've got to really be able to handle it all by myself.
Yeah.
So I'll probably take less than maybe a younger person would.
I'm interested now, this is your trip down the Mississippi, in addition to just being an exciting journey, is also a fundraiser for a local organization called Hope Restores. How did you learn about Hope Restores?
I saw the Amplifying Voices about a year and a half or two ago, which was the film produced here in town by a consortium of supportive organizations. And I was so taken by the stories of the youth, the Black youth, and then their parents as part two, that I asked somebody involved if they could help me get in touch with these people. And once I did, I... got involved in volunteering at Hope Restores at the very onset of their opening. And I've been an advocate for them ever since. And I had planned this trip, and about a month in, I thought maybe I would like to make it more meaningful and more substance for other people. It had a lot for me, but I thought I'd feel good to add something. So I thought of a pledge per mile kind of fundraiser, and I couldn't find anyone to do that for me, because I couldn't do that and train to paddle. So I told the people at Hope Restores, I think I'm just going to can the idea because I can't do it. And within a few days, they assembled a team, and they've been going strong at it ever since.
They found a way, huh?
They found a big way, yes. And they've had really good luck or good wisdom in picking people for the team. We have a project manager, we have a security team. We've got a team that will be coming down river to meet me several times to resupply my food. And that we have a team coming to pick me up at the Gulf to get me back home.
Okay,
so it's really expanded.
That'd be pretty awful if you had to paddle all the way back, huh?
All right. I might have to move down there, I guess.
I know. Yeah, well, you know, New Orleans is a nice place.
Yeah.
So speaking of Hope Restores and your volunteering there, I mean, I know you're not an official staff member or whatever, but are you able to talk a little bit about what kind of work they do in our community?
Yes, I can. They are helping at the grassroots level all the time, and that's their intention, to stay at that level. They reach out and help their neighbors, their Black neighbors, their community, their friends, anyone who is new to the area, a lot of single moms, a lot of mixed families, and also men, Black men who want to strengthen their education, their job history, their role modeling in the family. They also try to fill the gaps where our community doesn't always reach there. And one of those programs is the transportation program, where they'll take a single mother to a doctor's appointment, and they also have free daycare for the kids while the mother's at that appointment. So that's how basic they offer helps. And that's a lot of helps. That's 19 programs like that. And they need money to operate. So I thought this might be a way to start building awareness for diversity generally in this town, but also to build some funding for them to get this off the ground.
You talked about the fundraising aspect of it. Kind of your idea was a mile by mile fundraiser. Is that how it ended up? How does it work? How can people find out about how to support the fundraising part of it?
Well, it didn't turn out by a pledge per mile. It seemed to be a little complicated. So we had a brainiac, and we all brainstormed with this person, and she came up with a let's sell t-shirts, and you can put in your shopping cart miles. So people can buy miles by the quarter mile or half mile. People can also champion landmarks, which would be a lock and dam for a certain amount of money, or they can, the big one is the Blue Bridges.
Of course.
They'll sponsor that. And as I pass under, I guess I don't know what we'll do. We'll commemorate them. Right now, there's a woman who has purchased the boat ramp by the St. Louis Arch.
Oh, wow.
So when I get there, I'm going to stop and do a GoPro in her name. So we've got landmarks up and down the river, and we'll sell those miles up to as many miles as anyone wants to buy.
So how will people be able to follow your journey? Where can they find information about what's going on along the way?
If they go to www.paddlingforhope, and that's paddling for hope, not paddle for hope, which is an easy confusion, paddlingforhope.com, there are links to my blog, which is where you'll find maybe not daily, but frequent updates on my progress. You will find a t-shirt apparel tab, and you'll find the pledge or the donation tab. You'll also find a tab about Hope Restored that helps understand what their programs are. There's a Facebook page for Paddling for Hope as well that would lead to each other. There's a QR code that's going to be passed around town too on doors of businesses. And I believe that Hope Restores has some hard copies they pass out as well if people want to call there.
Okay. The river is called the Mighty Mississippi for a reason. A lot can happen, especially the farther south you get, the deeper and wider the river is. What preparations have you made to make sure that you're up to the task?
I have done a lot of studying through the winter since I couldn't paddle, but I've also tried to learn to read the water. And I was out yesterday for about 23 miles, and I tried to notice all the different characteristics that the water will bring. Even if they were smaller here than they might be down there, a lot of it's the same. The whirlpooling, the wing dams, and lots of current from the barges and so on. I've also talked to other paddlers who have helped me understand how they handle those things. So yeah, I think I have to follow the main channel, and other times I'll have to get off the main channel. I'm just trying to go with wisdom, what I know, and instinct for what I don't know.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to following your journey, Paddling for Hope. You're starting at some point next week, conditions permitting, and going to be at it for a little while. I look forward to seeing more about the journey. Tell us one more time about the website where people can find information about you, see updates about the journey, and probably most importantly, find out about the fundraising portion of the event.
The website is www.paddlingforhope.com. And there is a box at the bottom where you can sign your email and your name, and you will subscribe and you will get notifications for the updates.
That sounds great. Bobby Rathert is a kayaker who is about to embark on a journey down the length of the Mississippi on behalf of Hope Restores here in La Crosse. Bobby, thank you a lot for joining us on Newsmakers today.
Thank you too, Ezra. Take care.